Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Glad to have you here tonight. I hope you all had a safe and happy 4th of July. It was raining in Southwest Florida, so it was nice and quiet for me. Of that, I'm thrilled. My guest tonight is a thriller writer who has 6 books out, and she's part of an anthology also. But she's an interesting author because she writes about desperate people with kind of a high-tech bent. She writes about the CIA, industry titans, guys on sailboats. I love that. I got to hear more. Mobsters. We're going to find out a lot about her. She said there are characters try to find some truth, maybe with a little humor and probably lose a little bit of their humanity. But she writes about the power hungry. My guest tonight is Helen Hansen. I have to tell you, she's really, really funny. She's a licensed private pilot, and she spent her first anniversary with their flight instructor studying for the FAA practical. I love that. she claims that she was born in a flyover. 22 years, that's a riot. And she was born in a flyover country and has lived on both coasts near both borders at several locations in between. She lettered in tennis, worked as a machinist, I got to ask about that, and saw the clash at the San Francisco Civic Auditorium. I love that you live in Texas. You have a dog that composes music with squeaky toys and another one that's too lazy to bother. It is my pleasure to welcome to Authors on the Air thriller novelist Helen Hansen. Hi, Helen. Welcome aboard. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm good.
I forgot. Well, I was looking at your, I had been looking at your website, which is lovely, by the way. And I just love the way you describe your life. And you were born in a flyover country. I don't even know what that means. Were you born was it like kind of you got your mom was going into labor while she was on a plane someplace?
Well, actually, funny you say that, but no, that's not what I meant, but that's almost true. The flyover country, not New York, not Chicago, not the big city. I was born in Ohio, the kind of are overlooked. But honestly, my parents were retiring from the military, and I was conceived in Bordeaux, France. And my mom was pregnant with me when they left the military, and they stopped in Ohio with her family long enough to have me, and then we moved on. So I never really lived there other than as a baby.
How fun. How fun. Now, you were just telling me that you have dogs, and one of them never barks, or maybe once every 3 weeks will bark.
She won't bark. What she kind makes of kind of an oh sound. That's about it. And we laugh because it's like, oh, she spoke. She must want something.
That's bizarre. How fun. You when I was looking, doing some background on you, and I was really interested because you said that you were a machinist. And I'd like to know what that means. What kind of a machinist were you?
Well, at the time, I was trying to get a job. I moved to California. I wanted to finish my education out there, but I was going to get my residency first, so I needed a job. And there was some people I knew that had worked in a machine shop, that were working in a machine shop, and it paid better than minimum wage. But they wouldn't hire me. This was a few years ago. And the guy who owned the shop wasn't going to hire a woman. This was back in the day. But he told me if I could put 7 quarters on my elbow and stack them, and then, like you have your elbow back behind your, kind of lifted up with your hand behind your shoulder, if I could do that and catch him midair, he'd hire me. And so one day I did it. And the parts we made were precision ground parts out of titanium and steel. And they were for airplane fuselage. They were with tolerances of 0.005 of an inch. And, it's funny because one time we heard the carpenters working behind us, and they were working with tolerances of like 0.25 inch, and it just seemed so vastly different. But, yeah, I was the only one who worked there, probably the only one who ever did.
But I love the interview, balance of quarters.
It was,
was he a good boss, by the way?
Well, he was a fascinating boss. I won't say he was wasn't good. He was kind of creepy in a lot of ways, but he was also he learned to read as an adult, and I admired that. He would have his wife, you know, read signs to him on the way. So, you know, everybody's kind of an amalgam. He was a mess in some ways and kind of a jackass in some ways, but that one thing I could point to and say, well, I admire that, and we went with that. But I was only there about 7 months. It was all I could do. It was kind of frightening work. I mean, it was not safe work, there were guys who'd be, you know, three times my size who'd take one look at what we had to do and walk out of there. Because you'd have to put your fingers really close to this whipped metal wheel that was spinning around, and you put the part in there and it would grind it down. It was a grinding machine. So if you accidentally got your hand too close, it could be very dangerous. I knew a guy who lost a finger. If you put the part in the wrong way, or if the part was too big to begin with, it would kick it right back in your face. We had a wheel explode one time. I mean, that it felt, you know, that was kind of spooky. It was like a bomb went off. Everybody kind of hit the dirt, and yeah, it was interesting.
Wow.
But
wow,
yeah, so good stories.
Like
I got plenty of good stories.
Yeah, it is. You've done a lot of really interesting things. You were an operations director for high-tech manufacturers, but semiconductors and video games and software and computers. And you have a degree in your Bachelor of Science in Computer Science, correct? And
it's business, but computer science as well.
So you're kind of a brainiac, Helen. We're polar opposites, I want you to know. I'm the tech twit while you're the brainiac. Oh, really?
Well,
you have no idea how bad I am when someone says, well, can you please tell me, you know, this and this and this? And I say, can you speak to me like how I hate to say like a 5-year-old, because probably most 5-year-olds know more than I do, but speak to me as though I'm hearing for the first time. You know, I just don't know what you're talking about. God, it's horrible. What can I say?
Well,
did you ever use your degree?
You know?
I'm sorry?
Absolutely. I said technology's come at us so quickly, and in every aspect of our life, it's sort of permeated, you know, the kitchen, the bedroom, the bathroom, you name it. There's electronics everywhere.
Absolutely.
Even I used to laugh when my kid was little, because you'd throw something in the toy bin and there'd be noises and lights flashing. I was essentially trained to be a programmer or a computer systems analyst, and I got about 6 months from graduating, and I said, good Lord, I don't want to do this. By the way, I started out the world as a theater major, so it was kind of a shame.
I absolutely see the connection. There you go. I have a brother who's a systems analyst, so I understand. It's really hard to have dialogue with him. He really does not his world is so different from mine, you know, that when he tries to explain what he does, he gets so frustrated that now I just say, oh, okay, I understand, even though I have no idea.
Well, we used to make semiconductors, which is the little chips and everything these days. And
sure.
So when people would ask me what I would do, I'd explain it, and they'd go, oh, you're in computers. I'm like, yeah, okay, that works. It's kind of specific and kind of dull for some people, so you just move on.
So now you're writing, which takes us to thriller writing, which I it's totally circular for you. You started off as a theater major, so I can see the art there, but you kind of took a circular way to get there. When did you decide you were going to finally put everything else aside and sit down and write the book that you wanted to write?
I've always enjoyed writing. I mean, I've been doing it forever in one form or another. And after college, I went straight into manufacturing. And I didn't do technology so much as managing it. That seemed to be a more natural fit for me was running the teams as opposed to the actual work itself. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. But having to write in a business environment is soul-suckingly passive. It's difficult. It's difficult writing to do well, but it's completely opposite of fiction. And so after so many years of doing that, it was like, okay, I gotta, you know, bend some other muscles here. I've got to stretch some other part of me, because this isn't fun. And so I, you start toying around with some ideas. And I was working probably 70 hours a week at the time, sometimes more than that. I was in Silicon Valley, so that was part of one of the coasts I lived in. And that's just what you did. And the characters eventually have to have their way. And so I've written a couple of books that will never see the light of day, but True Lies is the first one I ever published. So I think everybody needs at least one to say, okay, let's move on.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you that there are, several authors have said, yes, they're still down there in the bottom of the desk or in the box in the attic or something. You know, they get carried around wherever. So I kind of understand that. I that's great. I love it. But you don't have an interest to pull those out and see if there's anything you can glean from them to see if you can grab another book?
Oh, no. It was completely no. I hear about
that bad.
When I hear about dead authors and they find old manuscripts, I'm thinking, oh, they're spinning like a lathe in their grave right now because, it was there for a reason.
That's funny.
If they'd have wanted it published, it would have been.
Right. I know. I often wonder about that, these found manuscripts and all. I want to talk to you about, first of all, you have to tell me, did the Masters CIA thriller series come out first, or did the Cruise FBI thrillers come first? Because it seems like they're overlapping there.
Well, Three Lies was my first book. It's my first novel. And then I wrote Ocean of Fear, which is the first book is going to be a series. The second book is coming out. Yes, the FBI stories. And then I wrote a third book called Dark Pool, which was about a kid hacker. And then I mentioned to you earlier that I watched my son over Christmas one time buy a book, and then he bought the sequel, and then he bought the third book in the series, and the fourth book, and the fifth book. And I thought, okay, everybody I know who's an indie author writes in series, except me. And it was that's when I decided that I was going to essentially serialize, if that's a word, my existing three novels. So I went back to Three Lies, and that was I wrote two more books in that series. So there's Three Lies, then there's The Master's Key, and then there's Dead Storm. So that comprises the three books.
Okay, so I want to talk about that particular one because I love espionage and spy stuff. It's my most favorite subgenre of all of the thriller series. And give me a good spy book anytime, a techno thriller or anything like that, and I'm hooked. So let's start with Three Lies, since that was your first published book too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
I had an agent actually interested in that one, but.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm looking at your reviews and everything on Amazon. I don't think you need that. Your reviews are awesome. I mean, people love your writing. You've gotten great, great reviews. So, you're doing great. And, of course, you do have your one-star cherry pop, so I'm glad about that. Because,
that
can be kind of...
That was
your one-star...
He says something about, do you have all your friends do that? I was so tempted to say, oh, my goodness, you have no idea. I don't have anywhere near that many friends.
Yeah. You have to have your one-star cherry pop because, if you don't, then it's a complete blow to you as a writer if you don't get that. It's better to get it out of there, wear it like a badge of honor, and just say, okay, let's move on,
I always say I'm an acquired taste in real life, so I have to be so with my books.
Well, that's okay. I kind of like that, I like that about you. So let's start with Three Lies, which is your first number one in Masters CIA thriller series. Tell us about this book and where this story came from, essentially, because it is an interesting story, made more so by the fact that your book covers scare the dickens out of me. I just want you to know that. So they are, they scare the heck out of me. So, and I'm a real wuss when it comes to covers like that. So you've got a cover of a guy with a ski mask. And
He looks, his eyes are very evil looking, and the ski mask looks like it's maybe green. I'm not really sure, but he's got kind of this black jacket on, and gives me the creeps. So tell me about Three Lies.
Well, the gentleman on the cover is Amir, and in the first scene, a young woman is kidnapped from her home, and she's held hostage by men she can't recognize because they're wearing ski masks, and that's how they identify them, is by the color of their ski mask. And her boyfriend is a guy by the name of Clint Masters, who's runs a tech company, but he started and founded a tech company, a satellite transmission company. But in the meantime, he's kind of sick of it all. His wife dumped him, and this was before he met his girlfriend, of course. And he just kind of wanted to check out, and he wanted to, you know, detox from technology, if you will. And he bought a sailboat. And I'll be honest, that part was slightly autobiographical, because I think we all feel a little bit, you know, chained to the electronic tethers sometimes. They're
oh yes.
Yeah, I mean, that to me would be an ideal vacation. It's just to check out for about 3 weeks, or, you know, till I couldn't stand it any longer without a phone.
Three months would work for me.
Email.
I would love it. I'd be so happy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, listeners. I love you guys. I don't want to go without talking to you. And I love my Facebook friends and my Twitter friends. You're all great. And I love my emails, but I can take a break from it and be very happy. So I get Clint completely. What happened?
Well, and what caused him to get to that point, or what happened next?
Mm-mm.
I mean, in his case,
the story.
He just...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So in his case, his wife dumped him, you know, for no reason. And then, so he, in the meantime, he meets Beth, and she's kind of everything his wife wasn't. But she's also has kidney problems, so she's on dialysis. And so she's kidnapped without her equipment. And I actually have a family member who went through a heart transplant. And that was pretty amazing. I mean, that changes you. Just even knowing somebody, it makes your perception a little bit different than it might have been.
Oh, it sure does.
It wasn't me, you know, but it was close enough that it just made me think about things differently. And anyway, so in the course of him trying to find his girlfriend, he realizes that nobody thinks she's missing. He's the only one who takes this whole thing seriously. Her family won't admit that she's gone. I don't know how much of the story I should give away here, but...
No, don't tell a whole bunch. Don't. No spoilers, though.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Nobody believes it. How can nobody believe it?
Well, her parents won't admit to it. Is how he feels. But he knows something's up. And in the meantime, there's something going on at the CIA that triggers the an investigation. A young guy who's, you know, kind of just slogging away doing grunt work, and he realizes that there's some agents missing. And he becomes part of a team that tries to figure out where these agents are, what they're up to, and whether or not they've had a computer breach, or whether some sort of mission's been launched that was unauthorized. So we've got these dual situations going on.
I like stories like this that have a lot of layers to them. You're not really sure if any of those layers are going to connect later on, but they might be just red herrings. Who knows in the story? But I love the fact that you're bringing multiple storylines into your book. It's wonderful. So I'm sure everybody asked you, what is your inspiration? But that's not necessarily my question. I suspect that you probably have a lot of ideas floating around in your head all about storylines and, you know, so how do you know which thread to pull and see where it leads you and decide to write a book?
Well, for me, it's the one that makes me want to go to the page. I don't know how to explain that other than it's the one that I just start writing. I wish I were more of an outliner, but I'm not. I have to have a basic understanding of what's going to happen in the story, but I don't have all the beats. I don't have all the sections written down in terms of what's going to happen. So I kind of explore some of it myself, but I but it's got to drive me to the page. It's got to drive me to want to write it. In the case of Clint Masters, I explored him as much as I did the rest of it in terms of, you know, what he's, I like the characters that aren't uber, they're not Jason Bourne. They
right.
don't have these skills that are going to get them out of anything. They have to rely on their own senses and their own,
right.
You know, their own tricks of the trade, and they all have technology as a weapon. I mean, I like to say that, you know, these days our criminals are at keyboards as much as at the end of a gun or a knife. I mean, you know, there's more damage inflicted over the internet these days than anything else. And, it, you know, it can be used for good or evil.
Well, this is true.
Again, there are opportunities for these people to use the skills they have to, you know, and in this case, find Beth. You know, Clint's trying to find his girlfriend. And
do you have a lot of ideas all the time, Helen, for things that you're considering writing? When you sit down
I have
to write, do you really? Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have your character first, or do you have this
character first? Absolutely, the character
really.
First.
Are they fully fleshed out in your mind, or do you learn more as you're writing? Or have you got a pretty good idea of who your character is when you first sit down to write?
I kind of know who they are in terms of their temperament and their interests and their I don't necessarily write a lot of it down for purposes, but I have a pretty good idea of who that person is. And then I see what kind of adventures they can have. That's, you know, who are they going to meet? How could they meet them? That kind of a thing. Who would they fall in love with? Who would they hate? Who would they want to have lunch with? Who would they want to maybe stab in the back? But I like to have my villains as well as my good guys.
Are already set up in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting. I want to take a break and remind everyone that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. I'm speaking to thriller novelist Helen Hansen, who is really an interesting lady, I have to say. We hit it off the first time we spoke. If you want to call in and say hello, 347-633-9609. And as a matter of fact, if you're interested in reading Helen's first book, Three Lives, is right now on sale in Kindle for a big fat zero. And this book has gotten rave reviews. So I urge you to go there now. It's Helen Hansen, Hanson. I want to talk to you also, Helen, about your other series, because you have two other series started, and you're going to be adding to it. So the first one that you started was about a boy who's a hacker. That book is called Dark Pool, and it's called a Fender Hacker Thriller. Can we talk about Dark Pool a little bit and tell me about it?
Sure. Well, in that case, it's I guess part of what I do is I explore themes. And the first, with Three Lives, it was exploring the theme of how technology's taken over our lives. In the case of Dark Pool, it was the concept of failing to launch as you know, young adults or adults.
In this
case, it's a young woman by the name of Maggie Fender and her younger brother, half-brother, Travis Fender, who was convicted of felony hacking. And so he's just in scene one. He's being released from the Federal Correction Institute. But her father is in his 50s, but he has early onset Alzheimer's. So Maggie's in charge of everybody. And she's a young woman in her early 20s and probably the one bright spot in her life is she lives on the beach, so that's not so bad. But it's her, you know, being everybody's, you know, guardian, everybody's parent, and she's got nobody to do that for her. And so she's carrying everybody's burdens. And in this case, there's also a secondary thread where, and this came directly from the Bernie Madoff case. I mean, that one, I just found that his behavior unconscionable. I mean, sure, you had people like Spielberg who lost money and could afford to lose it, but you had people who lost their life savings who trusted this
absolutely.
Man, and it was just
and
I mean,
had no remorse.
To me, it was just heartbreaking.
No shame. But the man himself, you know, how could anyone do that and kind of smirk about it? I just don't get it. I don't understand how that could happen, you know.
That kind of greed is beyond me. I just don't get it either. So in
when
this case, we had a
right.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. When you die at most toys, you're still dead.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, I always say I'm taking my books with me. They're going into the crematory with me, and so whether I'm going north or south, I'm going to have my books with me. So Maggie here kind of the go-to gal for everyone. The dad is, his memory is failing. The younger brother, the half-brother, comes out of a federal prison after being charged with hacking. You know, it's horrible. But then something else happened. Her dad is accused of stealing $40 billion, that's billion dollars.
Well, there is a person in the story, and his name is Pamara, and he is essentially the character. He's been, public. Everybody knows, his hedge fund, his dark pool money, if you will, because that's what it's a hedge fund where
right.
You don't really know what's being transacted, and all of his investors, are suing him. And there's an investigator who's trying to find the money, and he's going to be going to trial. But in the meantime, other people seem to think that Maggie and Travis's father, the man with Alzheimer's, had something to do with the missing money. And Travis seems their father is sending them messages. But Travis also says he was set up for the hacking charges. So we're not quite sure who's telling the truth at this point. But Maggie's just tired. She's sick of her brothers draining the family resources. She'd like to go to school, but she has to be a waitress at this point in her life just to keep things moving. And she's actually a nice person, but she's tired. And she's kind of cranky.
I can understand that. I'd be tired and cranky too.
Yep. They go together.
You have another book that you're starting off in another series. This is Ocean of Fear, and this is the Cruz FBI thriller series. You need to give us a little bit of insight about this book, please.
Yes, that one actually, that one's been out. That was my second. That was the second book I wrote, maybe my third. That might have been my third, but that one I've got a sequel coming out in August. And Ocean of Fear is about a young man, and this is the first character I had started that wasn't such a nice guy to begin with. He's my main character, but he's a robotics engineer, and he's still in school at UC Santa Cruz. He's in the master's program, but he makes his money and he earns his tuition by spamming your inbox. He works with one of the professors who is kind of a latent hippie, if you will, but together they spam for money. I mean, you send out, a million messages and you get 1%,
you're
still going to make a lot of money. It's
a
numbers game. But then he gets involved. He gets asked to do something that involves a cartel, and they want his robotics skills for something that, is illegal. And it starts to, jangle his conscience a bit because he's into something that isn't maybe as innocent as spamming. I mean, he felt like that was kind of a no victim crime, right? But in the very first scene, he finds another professor's body on campus who'd been murdered. We don't know if it has anything to do with his other professor friend, but that guy goes missing. So there's one dead professor, one missing professor, and Baxter, who's been approached by the cartel.
He's got problems.
And he's got it.
Got a lot of problems.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got problems, and he's parentless. His parents died in an auto wreck right before he started school, which is the reason he went into spamming, because he had his first semester was paid for, but he wasn't sure what he was going to do after that. And through one of the professors, he was kind of hooked up to do this work, and it's been fairly lucrative for him. So he hasn't really looked back since. But now he's kind of being forced to examine his own, how far is he willing to go? What is it?
Right.
Like you said, how much is too much? Well, how far is too far?
I you have quotes from your book on your website, which I think is ingenious. I love it. From Ocean Fear, which we're just speaking about, you said he found some duct tape and a hefty bag. Jim was going to bleed. Yeah,
well,
I guess
he was being transported. He was being asked to go somewhere, and he had to go into the back of a van, and he wasn't allowed to see where they were going. And he's thinking, okay, is this a setup, or am I really, you know, is he really transporting me someplace where he really needs me to work?
I like this one too.
But yeah,
this is from a different book where you say he had the conscience of a virus. That's a great line. I love that. That is so funny. Well, it seems you kind of infuse somewhere along the line a little bit of humor in everything that you're writing. Is that true?
I suppose I do. I have to make myself entertained for it, and sometimes I'll find like something like that made me laugh. I had one line that maybe not everybody would get, but the guy whose name was Sid, and Baxter says, I've never known Sid to be vicious. And it just made me laugh, so it had to stay in the book. Not everybody's going to get it. But
no, they're not.
Like, a lot of them, they'll write me. Yeah, a lot of my readers will write me, and they'll talk about the little Easter eggs that are in there. And if you get them, you get them. If you don't, you don't.
I love books
and one
like
of them
that.
I
love books like that.
In one of them, I made a comment about how they weren't like those Cardassians. And it was intentional for my Star Trek nerds out there, because
that's
one of the alien races on Star Trek. But I got people
writing
it, oh, you spelled it wrong. I'm like, no, I didn't. Sorry.
Nah. Although, you know, that's interesting. Two evil races I never thought about.
Indeed, aren't they, though?
Yeah, how interesting. Very funny. So you're releasing in August. Can you give me a little bit of heads up on maybe give us a title? So a little,
Spider Games. It's called Spider Games. It's a sequel to Ocean of Fear. So we'll see both Baxter and the FBI agent who investigated him in the first book. She'll be back as well. Her name's Claudia Segal.
I love that. We're soon running out of time, but I love talking to you, and you have such a great mind. Let's play Final Five. It's five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game?
Sure.
Okay.
I love Jeopardy. Let's go.
Nothing. It's never that complicated. Trust me. Actually, sometimes I do really well, and then they ask like a history question or a mythology question, and I'm forget it. I'm gone. So, and I don't know.
I just yell out the wrong answer louder. That's all.
I don't even own a TV anymore. I haven't had one for 10 years, so it's been a long time.
Yeah,
that's how come I get to read. Well, speaking of reading, whose book is on your nightstand?
I have a collection of short stories. I just finished some essays. What is that lady's name? But Wendell Berry is the author of the short stories that I'm reading right now. And I just finished an essay book by a wonderful author. What's her name? Annie Dillard.
Very good. Have you ever thought about writing outside your genre? And if you have, what would it be?
If I was going to do anything, it'd probably be science fiction or
I knew you would say that. I
just
knew
contemporary.
You were going to say that. Because you like the tech stuff. So it had to be that.
I do.
I love science fiction. We have a great science fiction show, by the way. Science Fiction Spotlight Radio.
Yeah.
And it's by H. Paul Hunsinger, who is a military science fiction author, best-selling author, is the host. Very interesting. Every other Saturday. He's really great. Okay. If you weren't writing and you could have your choice of anything, what would you want to do? I mean, no matter how crazy.
Professionally?
Yeah.
Making things. I like printing, so maybe sort of, that'd be fun. I don't know how to do it, but it'd be fun to try and figure it out.
Well, there you go. There you go. Tell me something on your bucket list.
My bucket list? Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to be surprised by some of the things I do, but some of my that weren't on my list, I did, and, you know, like learn how to fly a plane, that wasn't ever on my list, but there I did it.
There's no place you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of places I'd like to go, but I don't feel like if I don't achieve it, it would be somehow, you know.
Okay, we'll move on. We'll move on. That's okay.
Okay.
So what is something we would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, I kind of put some of that in the in my list. I don't have a lot of friends, honestly. I think that's kind of that was part of what I thought was so funny about that review I got, where they said, "Oh, you must have all your friends around." I don't. I have very few really really good friends. I kind of wish I was more sociable in that regard. But I could sit at the end of a bar and talk to you all day. That'd be more fun.
Interesting. You're better in a small group. Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But you know, if you have a handful of friends, then you've got exactly what you need. I mean, isn't it true? You know, you can know a lot of people, that's one thing, but the ones you count friends on, that's something else. So good on you.
People you can show up at their door at 3 a.m. and they don't go, "Are you serious?"
right, exactly. You can pick up the phone and say, "I need your help." And it's like, "Do you need the shovel, the getaway car, or the tarp?" You know, and those are the three things you got to ask. So I understand that. all right. So I'm just going to ask you one more, and that is, have you ever read any book more than once, and which one would it be?
Yes. Well, first of all, I homeschooled my son, and so part of the curriculum that we had, just a zillion Newbery Award-winning books over the course of the time, and a couple of books, I ran into that I would actually read to him. That was part of our curriculum. I would read to him for many years as part of our curriculum, and, you know, even before I was doing it, after I was doing it on my own. And a couple of them I found that I had loved, absolutely loved as a child, but could never remember they were. So it was fun to refine those, but I also have reread a couple of John Le Carre. He's one of my favorite authors.
Oh God,
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. He took all the silliness out of the spy world. Like James Bond, you know, it's not really what it's like.
Yeah.
We got George Smiley, who's as nondescript as possible, and I just loved him. He was a wonderful character.
He's fabulous.
Awesome. Yeah. So I've read a few of his.
I love all of those. I think, well, I told you, you know, before the show started that my favorite genre was of thrillers was spy stuff, espionage.
Yeah.
I love all that kind of stuff. And so naturally, you know, I'm very fond of those books as well. I'm right there with you. My favorite is a book by Trevanian called Shibumi. I think I read it once a year,
Shibumi.
Just because I can. Yeah,
so.
Shibumi. It's magnificent. Huh. Very old, but it's a magnificent book. So, Helen Hansen, it's been so fun talking to you. Tell my listeners where we can find you on the interwebs, please.
I am at Helen Hansen, HANSON.com. And if you Google my name, Helen Hansen, I'm right there. So I'm there on Twitter. I'm there on Facebook. I don't love Twitter. I am there on Twitter, and I am on Facebook. And I will be kind and gracious, even though I don't love being there. But it's a nice place to meet new people.
It's a necessary thing.
Getting out there sometimes. Yeah.
It's
a good thing, though, too. It really isn't an evil, necessary evil in my mind, so I should be kinder about that one. But
are you on Goodreads also? Are you a Goodreads author?
Very good.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Absolutely.
I cannot thank you enough for being with me tonight, and good luck with the launch of the new book. It sounds like tons of fun. And will you come back sometime?
I would. I'd love to. Thank you, Cam. I appreciate it.
I would love to have you.
It's been fun.
And listeners, on Friday, we're going to be talking to Manning Wolf, who is a debut novelist, but boy, she's a fiery Texas lawyer too, and you're going to love her listening to her. So I'll talk to you on Friday. In the meantime, Helen Hansen, thank you so much. You and I are going to talk soon because we're going to set up another interview. I can just tell, okay?
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate it.
Have a great summer, and I'll talk to you soon, okay? Thanks so much.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
You're welcome. And thanks for listening, folks. Thank you, Mom and Dad. Have a great week. Bye.